Thank you so much for receiving us today, Plains Mennonite. I'll admit I'm tempted to feel a little bit intimidated speaking up front here where so many people in my family have preached, but I won't let that get in my way. And maybe it's fitting that we're preaching here today on Father's Day, since I can't actually be with my father in person here at a family church. We're looking forward to sharing with you. David and I lived this last year, as you've heard, in Nazareth in Israel, Palestine, where we volunteered in several ways for the Nazareth Trust. We both felt drawn there through several connections, past connections. I was born and lived about 6 years in Israel, Palestine as a child when my parents were serving there, first with Mennonite Mission Network and then with MCC. And David's great aunts from Conestoga Mennonite served in Hebron for 37 and a half years, running an orphanage and school. As I completed seminary this past year, we knew we wanted to live overseas long term, and we felt called through conversations with Bob and Nancy Martin, with the Nazareth Trust representatives, and with what we learned about our work there. So our sense of direction seems to have been well placed, as it was a wonderful year.
In Acts 2, we read that at Pentecost, a crowd exclaimed, utterly amazed, "Aren't all these who are speaking Galileans?" in the passage that preceded our reading today. This exclamation was actually familiar to us due to a strange choice of words on the Nazareth Village website, which claimed until recently that our experienced local guides will lead you on your tour. We are often greeted with amusement by the mainly Israeli Jewish tour leaders. Upon handing their tour groups over to me, leaders would often joke, "So David will be our local guide today?" No, I would have to say, I'm not a Galilean, but I can confirm when occasionally pressed that yes, my name is actually David. At the Nazareth Village, one gets a sense that the story that we read in Pentecost is continuing. In a year, we give tours in 22 languages. While a modest majority of our guests come from the global north, are American, Scandinavian, or Dutch, many are Indian, Brazilian, Guatemalan. The almost 12,000 guests that Sophie and I led came from many churches, from Baptists to Irish Haldimand Mennonites, to non-denominational churches, to the 1,900-year-old Syriac Church of India. 2,000 years ago, Jewish reformers speaking many tongues left Jerusalem. Today, at the village, a stream of people speaking many tongues come back. At the Nazareth Village, we blend history, archaeological excavations, architectural replicas, scripture, and commentary on present-day Nazareth and its people, and present this to guests on a guided tour.
In addition to leading guests on tours at the village, I coordinated weekly devotionals and chapels for the international volunteers with whom we worked, and I visited patients at the Nazareth Hospital with local chaplains. This provided exciting chances to interact with patients as well as our fellow volunteers and friends on a spiritual level. After graduating last spring with a Master's of Divinity from AMBS in pastoral ministry, it was great to explore these new forms and levels of ministry in an unfamiliar setting. In all these ministries, we were privileged to see God at work and to hear from others the ways that they experience the Spirit at work in the world. We want to tell you about how our colleagues, patients, friends, fellow churchgoers, and village guests spoke to us not only with words, but with languages of faith. These people helped us to see new ways of encountering God, sensing the Spirit, and following Jesus. Testimony, pilgrimage, reverent speech, patient persistence, liturgy, and literalism were some languages for sharing faith that we heard. We hope to find ways to continue noticing these in the future, and we hope you can too. We'll begin with testimony. We were honored this year to hear many talk about their lives of faith and how they've encountered Jesus. A major theme at the hospital this year was forgiveness. I appreciated hearing comments from our spiritual director on what forgiveness can mean in the Arab cultural context, particularly in relation to issues of land and peoplehood, but also religion. One striking example of testimony that David and I got to experience came from one of my fellow chaplains, Simone, a man from the nearby village of Rainy. The week before we arrived in Nazareth, Simone's cousin, his younger cousin Jonathan, was brutally stabbed near his home and later died in the Nazareth hospital where we worked. Jonathan was the only child of parents who had waited years for him to come. Yet, after his death, they quickly became known to the surprise of many in the area for their choice to forgive his murderers. I heard the story the first week that we arrived in Nazareth and several times since then, but every time I've heard the story, I was amazed to hear how often this provides Simone with a chance to share with others in the community, especially in his work in the hospital. In that cultural context, retributive justice is common still, especially in the Muslim community. And so Simone is regularly asked by patients, often Muslims, how can this kind of forgiveness even be possible? This question provides him with an opening, clearly, for sharing the gospel with people with Jesus' message of forgiveness. And of course, parts of this story may be familiar to those in our community who know of Michael Sharp's murder in 2017, or of the forgiveness of Amish parents whose children were killed at the Nickel Mines school shooting in 2006. Not only do these and Jonathan's parents' stories serve as testimony to the human capacity to forgive evils, but more importantly, they serve as testimony to the redeeming work of Christ throughout the world.
For many people, including us, travel to the Holy Land offers a chance to reflect on what God has done and is doing in a new place and consider how that might inform one's own life. This I would call pilgrimage. The tradition of going somewhere to understand these things tends to be far from modern Western minds. Many of those of us who can travel often for work, to visit family, for vacation. Traveling to deepen our faith is less usual. We had the privilege of seeing how many people from all over the world and their excitement as they encountered this part of the world where the Christian faith began. For people from a wide variety of Christian and, of course, Muslim and Jewish backgrounds, a visit to the Holy Land is a period of prayer, intense and continuous learning, and reflection. It's amazing to see people prostrated on and kissing a stone in the Holy Sepulchre, or hear dozens of pilgrims singing as they walk up the Via Dolorosa, the route of Jesus' passion. Once, when I was trying to enter the West Bank during Ramadan, I was crushed for about 2.5 hours in a crowd of Palestinian worshipers who had come from Bethlehem and from the West Bank to pray at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, the main Muslim holy site in Jerusalem. Return entry to Bethlehem was an ordeal, with a massive crowd of people squeezing together and shoving each other to force their way through one or two revolving turnstiles. This chance to pray at the Al-Aqsa Mosque meant so much to them. It was not uncommon to see people experiencing a kind of pilgrim euphoria at the Nazareth village, too. Many of our visitors prayed, spoke, and worshiped in a different way than they did at home, seeing excavated terraces where Jesus walked and a wine press where he likely treaded grapes. The visitors are often visibly moved, emotionally and spiritually.
The different speech patterns in Nazareth impressed and formed us, particularly the sincerity of reverent speech. In the U.S. context, it's normal for us to hear people say things like, "Oh my God," "Oh Lord," or even "Lord have mercy" as part of our daily language. In our cultural setting, this language is rarely used to literally remind us of God, and it's also often negative. In Nazareth, people also use these same phrases, but much more often such language in Arabic is used to intentionally evoke thoughts and references to God. So when asking a Muslim person how they are, one might get the response, "Alhamdulillah," which means "praise be to God." In the same way, a Christian might respond, "Nushkur Allah," "thanks be to God." In this Arab setting, these phrases are used and understood as a reference to the person's well-being coming from God. When you want to say that you hope something will come true or will go well, both Christians and Muslims say, "Inshallah," "God willing." Again, these phrases are literal faith language used many times a day with the effect of keeping the speaker and the one spoken to grounded in their human experience as those worshiping the one who is all in all. Another aspect of daily reverent speech relates to the public communal celebrations of the Christian year. In many ways, Israeli society is secular, especially in the Jewish spheres, but increasingly in the Muslim and Christian Arab spheres as well. However, this hasn't stopped either faith from continuing to celebrate their most sacred yearly events. It was interesting and exciting for us to join in the Christmas and Holy Week or Easter celebrations in Nazareth. Both were exciting, but I was especially blown away by how often huge crowds of believers gather in public spaces, on the main road through town at Christmas, on the roads outside the churches at Easter, to celebrate together on these occasions. I became so much more aware of what it means to have grown up in this country where church and state are mostly separated. Even singing Christmas carols in the three Nazareth hospitals wasn't something that required special permission or visitor name tags. The hospitals are all Christian, but Christians and Muslims joined together in song that evening. Like the daily Muslim calls to prayer, which are projected out loud throughout town, this open proclamation of faith was not uncomfortable, even for those who shared different belief.
Over the last several years in Goshen, we enjoyed visits with Evelyn, Eleanor, and Alan Kreider, stalwarts of the Goshen Mennonite community. We appreciated Alan Kreider's book, The Patient Ferment of the Early Church, which presents an inspiring perspective on how the church took root and grew despite a lack of power or a cultural foundation in most of the Roman Empire. Alan cites patience as a key part of this story and the willingness to endure decades of stagnation and even persecution for the sake of the gospel. The patience and persistence that we saw from Palestinians was extraordinary. Existence is resistance, read signs in Bethlehem and in Hebron. 70 years into the occupation, prospects for a better life for Palestinians remain bleaker than ever. International support for the occupation is strong. Both nonviolent Palestinian resistance and support for and the occupation's critics in the West are silenced and cynically dismissed in the media as motivated by anti-Semitism. Most of the Arab world now actively works with the Israeli prime minister, and even a surge of Palestinian advocacy in the West would be less effective with the region lining up behind the occupation. In this context, hope seems irrational, and to work toward justice is to work for something we may well not see at all in our lifetimes. And yet, so many Palestinians show this spirit of patient ferment. We think of the only Gazan we met, a Christian, at a bus stop in Nazareth who works at a Baptist hospital in Gaza. In better times, he met and married a woman from Nazareth. Now he's only allowed in to see her and their two daughters for 1 or 2 months each year. We think of longtime friends of the Lapp family, a family from Bethlehem with a Palestinian father and an American mother. They run a nonprofit that does reconciliation work within the Palestinian community. The mother was never allowed long-term residency in Palestine, despite over 20 years there, and she was expelled last fall. Only after enormous effort, an expenditure of about $20,000 to the Israeli government, and international diplomatic intervention was she allowed to temporarily return just in time for her son's wedding a week before in Bethlehem last month. We think of taxi drivers and shopkeepers who eagerly told us their family stories, hoping they could get Americans to listen, while also showing us hospitality despite all our country has done to them. The way people continue to show faith and to act out of love seems to us to be a sign of God at work and of deep faith.
Liturgical experiences were something that David and I looked forward to when we moved to Nazareth, especially having both grown up in Mennonite churches. While most of the other volunteers attended the local Evangelical Baptist Church, David and I regularly attended the local Maronite Catholic Church. The Maronite Church is an Eastern Rite Catholic Church, which began around 400 CE with St. Maron and only became Catholic in the 1600s. This means that the church has retained much of their earlier, more Orthodox rites and traditions, such as iconography. The image you see on the screen here is one of the stained glass windows at the church, all of which depict stories from the New Testament. Although we attended the Maronite Church regularly, I especially enjoyed visits to the Greek Orthodox Church across town, which provided a completely different experience of liturgical worship and tradition within the same Arab culture and society. Some of my experiences of liturgical language in the hospital included the practice of crossing oneself before and after prayer. Because the Christian community in Nazareth is primarily Catholic, before praying with a patient that we knew to be Christian, the local chaplains would often cross themselves to open their prayer or to close it. Although all the chaplains are Protestants, many of them engaged with patients in this way as a way to be hospitable to their needs in a vulnerable time. Another experience of liturgical language that I was aware of and adored, because I'm an artist, during our time in Nazareth is the language of religious art. The liturgical churches are historically those most prone to having religious art in their sanctuary and worship and as a part of home life. In Nazareth, these churches include the Greek Orthodox, Roman Catholic, Melkite Catholic, and Maronite Catholic churches. For historical reasons, like the Maronite Church, the Melkite Catholic Church, they both retain the iconography tradition that the Roman Catholics dropped earlier on. In these and the other major churches in Nazareth and elsewhere around the country, we got to see how religious art is used and taken very seriously as a part of what it means to proclaim the Christian message in the Holy Land with or without words.
People in Nazareth read the Bible more literally than most of our Western peers, and we valued encountering this literalism. Coming from an intellectual Christian community, it was refreshing to see a context in which people often engage biblical stories as a recounting of real events and on the terms of their authors. This does not mean that we or most of the people around us believed that everything recounted in the Bible happened literally as described, but among our Christian sisters and brothers there, we sensed a deep belief that the Gospels are more or less accurate accounts. This was refreshing, as I think that without a communal belief in the church that the Gospels tell a more or less true story, Christian faith is unlikely to be passed on through generations or to neighbors. This feeling of the reality of the biblical story was not limited to Christians either. For people of Abrahamic faiths in Israel, and even secular people, a certain measure of literalism is intuitive. Various biblical stories are taught throughout the public education system, faith-based institutions, and heard in the local community as oral traditions of the area. As Sophie has speculated in the past, it may be easier to believe these things when you live in a place where they happened. Residents of Nazareth took us to their roofs on multiple occasions to point out villages where events in Jesus' life took place, or told us about the cliff that they thought Jesus might have been taken to be thrown off in the passage in Luke 4. For me, one person especially made an impression with a literal understandings, our supervisor, Christine Farah. Christine was educated as a human rights lawyer in Wales. She comes from England, married a man from Nazareth, and moved there. And she entirely shares our perspective on Israel-Palestine and on politics in general and our worldview generally. She's also a devout Christian, and she emphatically asks visiting groups to pray for Nazareth. She prayed with us through some of the more difficult times with my father's health. He has acute myeloid leukemia back home. Like many in Nazareth, Christine talks about Jesus' life growing up there in Nazareth not as a possibility, but as an event. And like Jesus himself, Christine talks about the devil as a reality, not as a concept, but as an influential being set against God. She modeled a bridging of modern and more literal understandings for us. We are looking forward to what comes next. During our time in Israel, we felt deeply affirmed in our calls to ministry in an intercultural context, and we're aware we want to keep working at intersections with the Middle East. Due to Israeli visa policies, we would be very unlikely to be able to remain long-term, but we want to return to Nazareth for short and hopefully later long-term times when it's more viable. We will begin a term of service next year with Mennonite Mission Network in a small village in Germany. In this setting, I'll work with the German Mennonite Peace Committee, which is a counterpart to Christian Peacemaker teams, and Sophie will work in a pastoral role with a local Mennonite congregation. We look forward to this opportunity and are also excited to explore continuing interactions with Middle Easterners living as refugees and international connections as well. As we continue to share about our work in Nazareth and look forward to this new assignment, we're especially grateful for the many kinds of people and communities who made this year such a wonderful experience for us. Thank you for the way your congregation has supported Mission Network and the Nazareth Trust, both causes dear to our hearts. Such support makes it possible for people like ourselves to work there alongside the many amazing local staff and volunteers to further the work of the Kingdom of God in these many languages of faith with which the Spirit gifts us. Thank you.